Okay, Chof Chesem at Aleph 28:82. In the regular Gemara, it's actually about the middle of the page.
Amar Rav.
No, Ashkechan Kreve Yoav. It's like 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 15 lines in the top.
What's the first word on the line?
First word on the line is Ubanim. 15 lines in the top. No, just count down. 15, what's the big deal? Okay, the Gemara was discussing, the Mishnah said like this, the various relatives that are not kosher to testify. So the Gemara asked, what do we know in the Chumash that your relatives are not allowed to testify? So the Gemara brought down a pasuk, "Liyum so avis habanim, a father can't die through the children can die through the father." And then the Gemara said, okay, we know children, how do you know cousins? And the Gemara said, because there's another reason, because the Torah could have said, it's a logic, because we learn from Adam Zermin, whatever. The Gemara is discussing, how do we know that relatives are not kosher to be witnessed? We know it's exeris hakosif, it's still completely illogical, right? But once the Torah tells us certain relatives are not kosher to testify, it teaches us other relatives. So now the Gemara says like this, Ashkechan kreve yoav. We know from the Torah that parental relatives, father relatives, cannot be, say, edus. But how do we know maternal relatives are disqualified? Because in many dinim and Torah, we know that the family basically goes by the father. The father realizes inheritance, all those types of things. So all these psukim is speaking about fathers and sons, and so we know the paternal side of the family cannot testify. How do we know the maternal? So it says like this, because the pasuk says, "Amekra avis avis trei zimne," because it says, "Lo yumso avis abanim, ubanim lo yumso avis." Parents, fathers cannot die for sons; sons cannot die for fathers. So the word avis is said twice. So imeina inyan lekreve yoav. If you don't need it to teach me relatives of the father, because that you already know from the first time, to nail inyan lekreve aim. There's a rule in Torah like this. If there's an extra pasuk and you don't need it where it is, put it where you don't, where it isn't. Meaning, we learn from psukim that relatives of the father's side are not kosher. But then the pasuk again says the word father. So obviously you don't need it for father's relatives because that we already know. So if you don't need it for father's relatives, use it for mother's relatives. That's the way the title works. But now the Gemara says, Ashkechan l'cheva. We find it for the punishment, because the Torah speaks about dying for the sin through the testimony. So Gemara says, "L'schus minolan." How do we know they're believed for positive things for the benefit of the family? We know that you can't testify for bad. Yeah, but how do we know you can't testify for good either? That somebody owes them money, or they, you know, whatever it may be.
In other words, like this, negative.
There's a rule in Torah. Something which it doesn't make sense, and the Torah teaches it to us, we can only go by what the Torah says. You can't extrapolate it for other things, because if it's something that's not logical, right, we have to go by what the Torah says. We can't use it for other cases also, because the whole thing doesn't make sense. Maybe over here the Torah says no, right? So the fact that all these psukim that speak, that we learn out that you can't testify relatives for one another, is only speaking about death, punishment, things like that. Yeah? How do we know that you can't testify for good either? Because there's a logic, I'll tell you why. Maybe a relative is not believed to say against the family. Because, you know, what type of relative are you putting your relative to death? But maybe for good things you are believed.
The
Kedushin, or things like that. So he says, L'schus minolan. How do we know that you can't testify even for benefit for the person? Like it's a wedding. Maybe for a wedding you could testify. So again, the Torah says, yumsu yumsu treizim. The Torah says, die, die. So it says the word avis twice, and it says the word yumsu, that they'll die twice. Now, again, if it's not for the father's family, use it for the mother's family. If it already teaches us one yumsu, that you can't testify negative, so the other yumsu, which is extra, teaches us you can't testify for positive either. Okay, so now the Gemara says even more. Ashkechon bedinin nefashos. We find this all by capital punishment cases. But bedinin mamonis minolin. How do we know in monetary laws relatives also cannot testify with each other, against each other, for each other, whatever? So Gemara says, Amar Rava like this. Mishpat echad yielochem. There should be one law for you. In other words, the Torah says, capital punishments and monetary punishments should have the same law. That's what it's about. Mishpat echad yielochem. There should be one law for you. Meaning, mishpat ashav alochem, it has to be rules in these types of things for all types of dinim. Whether it's monetary, whether it's capital punishment, they have the same law. So therefore, if relatives cannot testify in capital punishment, they cannot testify in monetary cases either. Okay? So bottom line of this Gemara so far, and now the Gemara is going to go into the category of relatives, which is a very interesting concept. So the Torah says, there's Exeris HaKosuv, an illogical pasuk that says relatives cannot testify. And the Gemara learns off in the various different psukim, not paternal relatives, not maternal relatives, not capital punishment, not monetary cases, not pro, not against. Bottom line is, relatives cannot testify whatsoever. What?
So in a case that a relative testifies, and later on they find out that he was a relative, what happens to that case?
Well, Beis Din's not going to kill somebody. Beis Din's not going to kill somebody. If they were able to find out, because before Beis Din kills him, they did research. They do the first thing they see, relative. That's the first thing they check.
Okay, but in other cases, in monetary or...
They're also going to check, so people will know, because one will disqualify. I will say the guy's a relative. If it's a monetary case, sometimes, if for whatever reason it is, they find out later the guy was a relative, the case is dismissed. Over. No, dismissed, not dismissed, but it's like you never had the judgment.
They won't kill the person.
No, I'm saying capital punishment, no such thing is going to happen. They will check it out from top to bottom.
What about in Kedusha?
In Kedushan, like? They'll have to redo the Kedushan. Yeah.
But we learned that.
So that was not the Kedushan.
I'll give you an example. If somebody had, for lack of a better word, Chabad doesn't classify Jews. Let's say somebody had a conservative reform wedding. So you can assume the relatives were not kosher. Either because they're not Shomer Shabbos, or because they're relatives, because they don't care. And later they find out that was the witnesses on the Kedushin. So they would redo the Kedushin.
If they don't
before that, they were not buried?
Yeah, but the kids are not the problem. The kids are kosher, kids 100% valid. But they would undo the Kedushin. In fact, that's what they do today. If somebody got married conservative, again, I'm using that word, and then they didn't get a get, and then they married somebody else, right? And they had kids, but they never got a get, right? So what will rabbis try to do? Rabbis will try to disqualify that first wedding. To say she's never married.
Annulled,
is that called annulled? Annulled means it was and you annulled it. It never was. Because we never kosher witnesses. And therefore this lady was never a married woman who married... You know what I mean?
What happens to the kids?
The kids are not mamzerim.
They are or not?
No. If you nullify it.
Oh, because there was nothing...
There's never a proper kedushin to begin with. That's why, in fact, somebody just asked me about this. There's a guy, a conservative rabbi, doing a wedding, but they want to have two kosher witnesses. I said, don't do it. Don't be a witness. Why? Because let's say, with the divorce rate the way it is, yeah? The statistics. So, a guy's going to come 10 years later, never got a get, right? If you get divorced, you never get. And then Rabbanim are going to hear you had a conservative wedding. So what are they going to think right away? It was never a kosher wedding. But the fact that you have two kosher witnesses made it a kosher wedding. Yeah, you know what I mean? And then the kid would be manzeir, and you can't allow it to, you know.
What if the rabbi goes orthodox, but the witnesses were not kosher?
If it's an orthodox rabbi that has non-kosher witnesses, he's not an orthodox rabbi.
He doesn't know
what he's doing. He shouldn't be doing weddings. Everybody knows relatives are not kosher.
So the rabbis, when they try to nullify, do they say, oh, it was a conservative wedding, or do they say, oh, it was a conservative wedding?
No, they'll do research. They're not going to stop doing it. They'll do research. They'll find out who the witnesses were. That's the proper protocol.
Yeah.
But you can't always rely on that. You know what I mean?
What if the rabbi now is orthodox, but at the time he didn't know any better?
So they'll know, they will nullify it. Again, they check in who the witnesses were. Sometimes, you know, the witnesses were good. Okay. Now, let me just explain like this. In the levels of relatives, okay, in the level of relatives, you have like this. Rishon b'rishon, sheni b'sheni, shlishi b'shlishi. Okay? One and one, two and two,
three and three.
Now, two brothers are called Rishon b'rishon. Two brothers are called first and first. Their kids are called Sheni b'Sheni. Their kids will be Shlishi b'Shlishi. Okay? Now, Rishon b'Rishon means two brothers definitely cannot testify. Correct? Sheni b'Sheni, this is what the Gemara is going to get into now. Sheni b'Sheni means first cousins, can also not testify. But sometimes you can have a Sheni for a Rishon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying you can have technically, mm-hmm. you can have Rishon Berisha's two brothers,
uncle and nephew.
So Sheni Berishon would mean a nephew with an uncle, or an uncle to a nephew. Rishon B'Sheni or Sheni. Instead, that's the just keep the child in mind, so to speak. By the way, parents and children are also Rishon Berishon.
Yeah, parents and children.
Yeah,
you can't testify, right? That's Rishon Berishon. But a parent and a child is still considered Rishon B'Rishon. Okay? But let's forget the parents' issue. So now, can two cousins testify for each other? So the Gemara is going to discuss this. Can a nephew testify for an uncle? Can an uncle testify for a nephew? That would be called Rishon B'Sheni.
Hmm.
Right? Then, just to jump the gun a little bit, if you have two girl cousins, correct? And they marry. So it's cousins-in-law. We'll get the puppy-in-law soon. They're cousins-in-law. Right? Can they testify for each other? This is what the marriage is going to be discussed.
You mean in-laws.
What is that called? That's not called Sheni.
It's called Sheni B'Sheni, but Baal Ki Ishtei. So we'll see in the Gemara, you say once Baal Ki Ishtei. Whether you say today Baal Ki Ishtei is a whole discussion that we're going to see. Now the Gemara is just going to start going into now the various relatives, because the Mishnah basically was very brief. The Mishnah said an uncle and this and that. But now the Gemara is going to talk about the description of actually which relatives could testify. Then two cousins, two male cousins. Now, women can't testify anyway, so it's two female cousins is not a question. They can't testify just because they're women, also, right? Nothing personal, but that's the fact. But now the question is, can a cousin testify, you know, for two male cousins that cannot testify against each other? But can one testify for the other one's wife? Because technically they're not related. They're only related through marriage. This is what the Gemara is getting into now.
Two sisters, their husbands can't not testify.
It's called brother-in-law, that the Mishnah said.
Right, the Mishnah said
that. That's brothers-in-law.
And then the Shlishis are okay?
No, we're going to see now. Then sometimes you have Shlishi Berishon.
Oh, not
or Shlishi B'Sheni. Mm-hmm. You understand? These are all the relatives that's going to come up in the discussion in the Gemara. But we need to understand what?
No.
We need to understand the fundamental concept. There's Rishon B'Rishon, there's two brothers, Sheni B'Sheni, there's their children, Shlishi B'Shlishi, right? Now, can second cousins testify for each other?
What do you mean by second
cousins? Yeah, each other? The
nephew.
Second
cousins? Yeah. Kids.
That's Shlishi B'Shlishi.
Right. Now, what happens if you have first cousin once removed?
What is that?
What is that?
Don't speak English.
What is once removed? What is that?
You need a power. What's it called?
PowerPoint.
PowerPoint. You have a cousin? Okay. What is their kid to you? Okay, let's put it this
way.
Could you? It's good.
One second. Listen. Guys, this is English. English. Language, English. Two cousins. First cousins. You know what that is?
Okay.
Their kids to each other. Speak English. Their cousins to each other are second cousins. Great? Correct? Now, what is... That's your cousin's kid to you. Is that second cousin? Because your kids and them are second cousins. What are you to that cousin? So in English it's called first cousin once removed.
What is that? Could you say it says Shlishi or Revi? That becomes a Revi?
No.
Once removed?
It's not
Shlishi B'Sheni.
Shlishi
B'Sheni,
yeah.
Oh, we don't go past Shlishi there.
You can have, technically.
I know, but Shlishi is once removed.
Well, don't see about Shlishi B'Shlishi. No. Shlishi B'Sheni.
Once removed, what is that in Hebrew? Is that Shlishi?
Sheni B'Shlishi.
Sheni
B'Rishon, I'm sorry. Sheni B'Rishon.
No.
Shlishi B'Sheni. Yeah.
Shlishi B'Sheni, the Shlishi is once removed.
If it's your Sheni, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Cousins are Sheni B'Sheni.
Okay.
Second cousins are Shlishi B'Shlishi. But what is one cousin's kid to the father's cousin?
Once removed.
It's first cousin, once removed. So that's called Shlishi B'Sheni.
Oh, I see.
What about a cousin's cousin? Is that anything?
Abidin, it's not a relative. Nevertheless, Halacha says, Lechatchila, you try to make sure there's no relationship whatsoever. As far as you can go.
But is there a term for that? A cousin's cousin? Is that
like,
that's not a second cousin.
No, it's a cousin's cousin, not a second cousin.
There's nothing.
Abidin, it's nothing. You could testify.
After 30, it's okay, is not?
Huh?
After third is okay.
Yeah. But I'd say third, sometimes third is also good. We'll see.
But Rabbeinu, all the Jews are related.
Yeah, I feel like they're going to always find.
Yeah, but you're going back way back, Shlishi, B'Shlishi,
no,
and all that.
Within Persians.
Like in the Persians.
In Persians, they're
all cousins.
Yeah.
They're all cousins.
And yet they all hate each other and they all kill each other. The Muslims say they also are cousins.
Bruh.
They can't testify.
For a lot of reasons. Okay, let's see this now. Amar Rav. Rav said, okay, just picture the chart in your head. Achi Abba, my father's brother, lo yoyedli, cannot testify for me. Okay, my uncle can't testify for me. Because that's Sheni Barishan. Afani, the same thing. I, Loyoyed loy cannot testify for my uncle, ubni v'chasani, nor my son or my son-in-law can testify for the uncle. Now, my kid to my uncle is Shlishi Barishan.
Your kid to?
Me to my uncle is Sheni Barishan. Me to my uncle is Sheni Barishan. My kid is Shlishi Barishan. So Rav says, that's also no good.
Okay.
Now you have to understand, Shlishi Barishan is closer relative than Shlishi B'Shlishi.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the source of it.
Sure.
Right? In other words, not only can a nephew not testify for an uncle, but a great nephew cannot testify for an uncle.
Right.
Because that's Shlishi Barishan. But third cousins would be Shlishi B'Shlishi, I mean second cousins, might be able to testify. Second cousins.
Rabbi, it goes both ways. Rishon be Shelishi and Shelishi be Rishon is the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the uncle to testify.
If the uncle can't testify for the great nephew can't testify for the uncle.
So they're all the same. Okay, they're
That's the same. But he said even my son-in-law can't. Okay?
Rabbi?
What?
Just thinking out loud, if inside the city, they're all relatives, small city, small village, everybody is somehow...
So you have to get relatives from outside.
No. Witnesses from outside.
What did I say? Witness?
No, you said relatives from outside.
So you have to get witnesses from outside. What?
How can you get witnesses from outside?
Get them from a different city. Happens, fly them in.
If something happens in that city, who's going to testify?
Yeah, they are not there. You have to fly them out.
You can't. But how close are the relatives? Second cousins, though, is not a problem. Technically, shlishi b'shlishi, second cousins could testify.
But if they're all relatives...
All first cousins? The whole city is first cousins.
Second cousins...
Second cousins could testify. Yeah. But first cousin, what do you have a city full of first cousins? Who wants to live in such a city?
Maybe in Iran.
Rabbi, we have two columns, okay? Two columns.
Yeah.
If the Rishon, first one, a third of the cousins, they can testify.
No, that's what he says.
No, this... The second column with the first column.
Can't.
They cannot testify?
That's Shlishi Verishon. No, that's what Rav's saying over here. That's exactly what he's saying over here. In fact, the Gemara asks, Amai, Rav says, basically, a Shlishi Verishon cannot testify.
To the same column or different?
No, it's different columns. No. Okay. Now, the Gemara, Amai, why? Havale Shlishi Verishon, right? The great nephew with the uncle is Shlishi Barishin. Vanan Sheni B'Sheni Tanan. We only learned in the Mishnah that a Sheni B'Sheni can't, and Sheni Barishin Tanan. Our Mishnah only says cousins can't, it says only brothers can't, but it never says in our Mishnah that the third cannot testify for the first. Why is Rab, where does Rab get that from? Rav is coming up with a chiddush that Shlishi Barishin cannot testify. So Gemara says, our Mishnah doesn't say that. Our Mishnah says Rishin Barishin can't. Our Mishnah says Sheni B'Sheni can't. But where does it say Shlishi Barishin can't? And the Gemara says, Shlishi Barishin Leitanan. So the Gemara answers, you're right. Ma'ach Chasin Niktani B'Masnisin. Okay? When the Mishnah says son-in-law, our Mishnah does use the word son-in-law. But the Gemara thought it's the original son-in-law, not the son-in-law of the son.
What is the original?
A father has a daughter and a son. So the son-in-law cannot testify for the brother-in-law.
Okay.
But the Gemara says that's not only what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah doesn't only mean the son-in-law who's a brother-in-law of the one he's testifying, it means even the son's son-in-law. In other words, when the Mishnah says son-in-law, the Mishnah says the son-in-law cannot testify. Yeah. So we're learning the Mishnah means a regular son-in-law cannot testify against his brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. One says, no, that's not what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah means even a son-in-law of the son cannot testify for the uncle.
Son of the son-in-law.
Right. So our Mishnah does say, and so Rav explained, that's what the Mishnah means. When the Mishnah says son-in-law, it doesn't only mean a normal son-in-law, it means even the son's son-in-law can also not testify. Shlishi B'Rishon. So then the Gemara says, if that's the case, why doesn't it simply say Ben B'nai? The Mishnah should say a son, because sons and son-in-law is the same thing. So why does the Mishnah say, if the Mishnah means son-in-law? Why does the Mishnah say son-in-law? The Mishnah should say son, which is also Shlishi B'Rishon. A son with a great uncle is also shlishi berishin. Right now, the Gemara learns, which is, by the way, the correct halacha, that one marriage, a son-in-law is like a son halachically, because it's only one baal ki ishti, a man is like his wife, right? So the Gemara learns that a son-in-law is just like a son as far as testimony goes, right? So if the Mishnah wants to teach me that a son's son-in-law is not good, the Mishnah just should have said son and son's son. Why does it have to say son-in-law? Because if the son's no good, the son-in-law's no good because they're married. Right? Got it? Because the Gemara is learning now, and that's the halacha, by the way, that if a son is no good, a son-in-law is also no good.
Son-in-law is not good, the son is not good either. No,
no, for sure the son's no good. The son's closer. But oh, no. Even a son-in-law is no good.
How about the son of son-in-law?
That's what the Rav said, that's what the Mishnah is teaching us. But the Gemara asks, if that's what he's teaching us, why does the Mishnah just say son's son? Why does the Mishnah mean son's son-in-law? It should say son's son, which automatically includes the son-in-law.
Why would it automatically, it wouldn't automatically include it?
Yeah, because there's an assumption already that
Balki Ishtri. We didn't talk about that yet.
Yeah, but that's what Gemara's going to get into more discussion about that. But the Gemara's question is, obviously that's what it means. So he says, so the Gemara says, why, Rav says, Milsa Agav Urcha Kamash, Mishnah, you know why it says son-in-law? To teach me, Baal Ki Ishte. Really, the Mishnah could have said son. But the Mishnah wants to teach me another aspect of it, that a husband and a wife is like the same thing. So therefore, if you can't testify for a daughter, you can't testify for her husband. And therefore, the son's son-in-law cannot testify for his great-uncle. And definitely not for his uncle.
You just said.
Would be Shani, Shlishi B'Shani. Shlishi B'Shani would be also a nephew for an uncle. Could be that way.
How can a Shlishi B'Shani be nephew for an uncle? It has to be a Shani for a Rishon to be nephew for
an uncle. No, because if two cousins, a Shani B'Shani, and one's kid, to the father's cousin, father's brother isn't. No, you're right. It'd be Shlishi B'Rishon. Yeah. Two cousins' kids are not an uncle, right? It's a cousin once removed, correct.
What's your uncle from your, that's married to your aunt from your mother's side?
That's the Mishnah. The Mishnah did say that one. The Mishnah said, Balachay Saviv, Balachay Sime. The Mishnah said clearly, your father's sister's husband is not kosher to testify.
And the mother's sister's husband?
Same thing. Ubal ime, yeah. So it doesn't matter if it's maternal relatives, paternal relatives, right? Up to certain levels, they cannot testify.
If somebody comes up and needs a witness, and he's a second cousin, but he didn't know, nobody knew that you were cousin.
That's what he asked, and then you find out. No, second cousin up, he then could testify. Shlishi Barishin is closer than Shani B'Shani.
Rabbi, if they did not have any relationship and they didn't know that they are relatives, so they are like strangers.
It's still a relative.
But they did not know at the time, this cousin did not know that cousin.
Let me ask a question. Somebody had a child, they gave him up for adoption. Okay, they were raised by a different family. The son never knew that he had a father, or the daughter never knew they had a father or mother, right? And then later on in life, they find out it's their father and mother. Are they related?
Yeah, but that's biology, and it's really...
We don't hear biological. Cousins are biological.
True.
Cousins are blood relatives.
But for those intents and purposes,
the Torah says, any relationship, see, if you're telling me, I'll tell you what, if you're telling me a relative is not kosher logically, then maybe you'd be right. But it's not logical. We learned The Torah says a relative cannot testify. It's not logical. It doesn't matter if they knew they were relatives or not. It's not logical. If you say, listen, like one of the Gerer Rebbes once said, oh, you know why relatives cannot testify? He said like this. If he's testifying good for you, he's biased. And if he's testifying against you, he's a behemoth. He's an animal for testifying against a relative. So then he doesn't do, he's not a kosher witness because he's not a person. That's what the Gerer Rebbes said. Okay, but the bottom line is, the bottom line of it is, the Torah says a relative cannot testify, period. It doesn't mean because they know, they didn't know, they have a relationship, they like each other, they hate each other. They don't, you can't hate somebody you don't know.
So Negeh Bedavar is not a question at all.
Negeh Bedavar is not the reason why a relative is not kosher. Negeh Bedavar means, I have a bias, there's something in it for me to gain, good friends, or whatever it is, yeah? That may be where you're Negeh Bedavar. Relatives have nothing to do with Negeh Bedavar. Relatives are because the Torah says relatives cannot testify. It's exactly a custom. Just like the Torah says women cannot testify, it's not because there's anything against women. The Torah says a Jewish king is not allowed to testify. It's exactly a custom. There's no logic. Moshe and Aaron saw murder. They cannot testify. Both of them together. One could testify and hopefully there's going to be another witness. Anything. It's not because they're going to lie. It's not because they're biased. It's not because they're negeh bedavar. It's simply because the Torah says they can't testify, period. So it doesn't matter if you know the guy or don't know the guy. Bottom line, if you find out later, the guy was a relative, it disqualifies the wedding. Let's speak even by wedding. Two people testify, and later you find out they were relatives. So you have to redo the Kedusha, like we said. There's nothing to do. The guy... Like I said, you can't hate somebody you don't know. I know a guy, he says, I love going to a show where Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur that I don't know a soul. Then I could say I love them all. And then I daven Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I feel good, I love all the Jews in the show. Somebody you don't know, you can't love or hate. I mean, you can't hate, you can love. Why not? It doesn't bother you. But it's not the point over here. It's not the relative because he might lie. Even if you know for sure the relative's not going to lie because he really couldn't care less, it's still not kosher. Like you said, Moshe and Aaron, for sure, are honest people. They're not going to lie. Okay? The Moshe and Aaron saw a murder. Not even against each other. Moshe and Aaron saw a murder. Moshe and Aaron saw the moon. Moshe and Aaron can't come to Bezin to testify together. It says one of them should come as a witness and the other one shouldn't come. And he's not a witness. We said this many times before. Under a chuppah, they designate the witnesses. Mm-hmm. Some people even add to the exclusion of all others. Why do they designate witnesses? Just have witnesses. Who cares? You want to hear the names mentioned? Who cares? Just the witnesses call up. Because under a chuppah, you have a father there, you have a brother there, you have a cousin there, you have a mother-in-law there. She's anyway not kosher. But you have all these relatives there. And they're all watching it, right? And there's a din that if you have 100 witnesses, and out of the 100, one is no good, they're all no good. It's another illogical din in witnesses. Eidus shebatla miksasa, batla kulo. Witnesses, a part of them are disqualified, all are disqualified. So what do you gain by designating the witnesses? And even if you don't add to exclusion, but some even add to exclusion of others, basically what you're saying is, these are the only two witnesses to this act. Whatever anybody sees is not testimony. So then all the relatives are not existent as far as laws of testimony. So therefore, these two witnesses are the only witnesses, and nobody else has a right to testify. So therefore, all the relatives are worthless. Because then otherwise, every kedusha would be not kosher.
Rabbi, the ones I think version Rabbi, because a lot of people want to sign, what they do, they turn it back to the ketubah and let them sign there, whoever wants to sign. That doesn't mean anything back of the ketubah.
Halachically, it doesn't mean anything. Some people wouldn't want it. Yeah, because if witnesses, not only that, in a document. Even in a ksuba, but any document, The din is you're not allowed to leave any space between the end of the document and the witness's signature. And if you do, it's not kosher. You know why? Because after the witness is signed, you can have whatever you want.
Right.
The guy says, they say four lines under the document, the witness is signed. So they signed, yeah? Now, you can add whatever you want to that document, and you officially have the witness signed it. Right? Therefore, when people, even in the Ksuba law, this is all pertaining to this, a lot of times people want Hebrew and English Ksubas. You know, they have the...
Yes, yes.
So, as long as the witnesses, because halacha doesn't care what the English site says. What they want, who cares? But they have to make sure that the witnesses are signing under the original Hebrew. You can't have the witnesses signing underneath the English too. Instead of under the Hebrew.
Right.
They have to sign right under the Hebrew, because that's the kosher document. What happens afterwards is whatever.
Right. And if there is a space and the space is empty, it's still kosher.
No, it's not.
Why? Nobody added anything.
Because halacha says the fact that somebody could add makes the witness's signature not kosher.
But
could the rav be a witness?
The rav of a wedding could be a witness, yeah. And that's why a lot of times when rabbis go to non-religious weddings and there's not going to be any kosher witnesses, the rabbi will bring with him a Shemesh Shabbos person. No, the rabbi could count as one.
Yeah, count one?
Yeah, yeah.
Automatically.
He could be one. If he wants, he could be.
You can't be there.
Why not? Why can't he be a witness?
Because it's the ceremony. Doing so ceremony,
what?
Be a,
so what? It could be a kosher witness.
So the father can be the...
No.
No.
Oh.
The do ceremony?
Why
the
not?
Father?
I did my kids. Except
rabbi,
one. My father
rabbi,
did.
If somebody wants to get married... And he's in a town, there is a kosher rabbi, but no kosher witness.
So the rabbi will bring another witness from somewhere else.
The rabbi could not find another kosher witness.
Then they move the wedding somewhere else.
You know what? Almost all the people who married in Tehran, they had to come moving to U.S. or somewhere because they were not really kosher.
He said there's no Shomer Shabbos Jews in Tehran.
They're not very, very
no.
few.
You have to do it again.
I tell you, there are maybe a handful of them.
They have to do it.
Honestly.
I think you didn't know that.
In Tehran.
Want to tell me the all
Mamzeidim?
What do you want to tell me? Want to tell me the all
Mamzeidim? No. That's not what they mean.
No, I know what he means.
No, in many the smaller towns.
Okay, Vaitev.
Rama, when there is 118, how do you select two and nullify the rest? But just verbally?
By saying we're designating you two as witnesses.
Even though they came, hundreds, they came and said we want to testify. We say no. 98 out of question, only you two. Oh, they think can do that.
The Gemara says of when the Rosh Hashanah when it speaks about the witnesses of kids. The Gemara also here says that what do you do when the father and the son see the moon? They have to come to Beth Din, right? Mm-hmm. So if a father and a son saw the moon, one of them goes and one stays home.
Oh, so the Beit Din says we don't want to hear you.
What did they come?
Right.
But you still need another one.
Yeah. So they get another one. What happens if there's no other one? Like I said, Moshe and Aaron are first cousins or brothers or father and son were the only ones that saw murder. The only ones that saw murder was Moshe and Aaron. Yeah? So now one of them is good, one of them is not good, right? So the guy's going to go off the hook?
Really?
The answer is yeah. There's no witnesses. The guy gets off the hook. Just think if the guy killed somebody, no witnesses. So God will take care of it. But meanwhile, Beis Din can't do anything. It's Bashert. It's destined from Hashem that this murder shouldn't have any witnesses.
So same as he got up on technicalities?
Yeah, but the technicality doesn't work in civil law.
Rabbeinu?
In Torah law, I mean.
In case of the moon... If one witness is, could someone from Beit Din go out and testify also?
Yeah, but then they can't be a judge. Ain't aid nasa dain. A witness cannot be a judge. If let's say Beis Din was going for a walk, and Beis Din saw a murder, they can be witnesses. but then they can't sit as judges on the case. So the question is, it's also really Einei Nasadayin, but there's a logic to it. The question is, what better judges is that? Like, these judges have to hear from a witness. Here the judges themselves saw the murder. What's better than that? They for sure should be able to be judges. Like this, they hear it from somebody else is better, maybe the guy's lying. Here, the judge at the Besdin saw that the guy killed somebody. Why isn't it good?
Just kill him right there, don't need
anything else. Yeah, just kill him. So the answer, they cannot judge the case. Why not? Because they're not biased anymore. I mean, they're not parif. They have to be objective. The Torah says, v'shavto eida, v'tzilo eida. They have to judge and be able to save the guy. Judges have to be objective. Once they watch the murder, they can never be objective anymore. And the Torah says the judge has to be objective. So if I hear it from witnesses, I could still be objective. Maybe they're lying, maybe somebody else will come, whatever. When you see it yourself, you're automatically not objective anymore. And a judge is not objective. This, by the way, in capital punishment. In monetary things, you could. But in capital punishment, you can be a judge.
Monetary, you could.
Yeah. Why? Especially if they accept you. Why? Because v'shavta v'yitzilu is in capital punishment.
Oh.
If a guy comes in court and admits, yeah, and then changes his mind. Guy comes in front of Besdin, I take you to Besdin, we come to Besdin, I say, you owe me $1,000. You say, yeah. Yeah? And then you say, no, I changed my mind. It's too late. You already testify in Besdin for the money, right?
Right.
But what happens if I tell you in the street, you owe me $1,000? You say, yeah. And you come to Besdin, you said, no. Okay? Then you are believed. Because, can you imagine if I come to you and say, you owe me $10,000? You say, yeah, yeah, what else? Like, what else is new? Right? So it's not admission. In Besdin, shtika kohoda. Silence is admission.
Yes.
But outside of Besdin, okay, I say, yeah, you did something. Like, I ignore you. That's not admission. Or if I say, yeah, right. That's not admission. Nobody's going to say, yeah, right. In Besdin, if Besdin says you owe him the $1,000, he says, yeah, right.
So an eight cannot change his mind?
No. Given shehigit, shuv ein chezer amagid. The Gemara says, once a guy testifies, he cannot change his mind.
Rabbi, if you cover your face and you kill somebody in the law, Jewish law, you cannot do anything to escape?
No.
That's what I do.
So you do, you mean?
What?
You didn't see the guy.
What is the case? I don't understand.
The guy puts on a ski mask and kills somebody. Did the witnesses see who it is?
No.
Fingerprints?
No, fingerprints in Torah law doesn't work. DNA doesn't work in Torah law.
It's not 100%.
Yeah, no, because the Torah says it has to be Eidim.
Well, I know, but Re'iyah has to be or can be just only circumstance.
Re'iyah is Eidim.
Yeah.
DNA in biblical law doesn't work. Not in capital punishment. I'll give you an example. Today they have a DNA. They have a Kohen DNA. You ever hear it? Yeah. Kohen DNA.
Yes.
There's a DNA that's pushed to certain genes that only Kohenim have. Okay, now, if somebody has a DNA and they prove they're a Kohen, does that mean become a Kohen? 100% not. Because a guy could be a Goy. What happens if a Kohen marries a Shiksa? The kid's a Goy, right?
But
he has a DNA of a Kohen. No, I'm saying that's going to make a guy a Kohen. Or a guy's last name is Cohen. I mean, what does that make him? It makes him a Cohen? How can it make him a Cohen? He could be a Cohen, for that matter, with the name Cohen. It doesn't work. Okay.
Oh, yeah.